If there were such a thing as sin, this would be it. To allow yourself to become what you are because of the experience of others. This is the sin you have committed, all of you. You do not await your own experience. You accept the experience of others as gospel, literally. And then when you encounter the actual experience for the first time, you overlay what you think you already know onto the encounter. If you did not do this, you might have a wholly different experience, one that might render your original teacher or source wrong. In most cases, you don't want to make your parents, your schools, your religions, your traditions, your holy scriptures wrong, so you deny your own experience in favor of what you have been told to think. Nowhere can this be more profoundly illustrated than in your treatment of human sexuality. Everyone knows that the sexual experience can be the single most loving, most exciting, most powerful, most exhilarating, most renewing, most energizing, most affirming, most intimate, most uniting, most recreative physical experience of which humans are capable. Having discovered this experientially, you have chosen to accept instead the prior judgments, opinions, and ideas about sex promulgated by others, all of whom have a vested interest in how you think. These opinions, judgments, and ideas have run directly contradictory to your own experience, yet because you are loath to make your teachers wrong, you convince yourself it must be your experience that is wrong. The result is that you have betrayed your highest truth about this subject, with devastating results. You have done the same thing with money. Every time in your life that you have had lots and lots of money, you felt great. You felt great receiving it, and you felt great spending it. There was nothing bad about it, nothing evil, nothing inherently wrong. Yet you have so deeply ingrained within you the teachings of others on this subject that you have rejected your experience in favor of truth. Having adopted this truth as your own, you have formed thoughts around it, thoughts which are creative. You have thus created a personal reality about money which pushes it away from you. For why would you seek to attract that which is not good? Amazingly, you have created the same contradiction around God. Everything your heart experiences about God tells you that God is good. Everything your teachers teach you about God tells you God is bad. Your heart tells you God is to be loved without fear. Your teachers tell you God is to be feared, for he is a vengeful God. You are to live in fear of God's wrath, they say. You are to tremble in his presence. Your whole life through, you are to fear the judgment of the Lord, for the Lord is just, you are told. And God knows you will be in trouble when you confront the terrible justice of the Lord. You are therefore to be obedient to God's commands, or else. Above all, you are not to ask such logical questions as, if God wanted strict obedience to his laws, why did he create the possibility of those laws being violated? Ah, your teachers tell you, because God wanted you to have free choice. Yet what kind of choice is free when to choose one thing over the other brings condemnation? How is free will free when it is not your will but someone else's which must be done? Those who teach you this would make a hypocrite of God. You are told that God is forgiveness and compassion. Yet if you do not ask for this forgiveness in the right way, if you do not come to God properly, your plea will not be heard. Your cry will go unheeded. Even this would not be so bad if there were only one proper way. But there are as many proper ways being taught as there are teachers to teach them. Most of you, therefore, spend the bulk of your adult life searching for the right way to worship, to obey, and to serve God. The irony of all this is that I do not want your worship. I do not need your obedience. And it is not necessary for you to serve me. These behaviors are the behaviors historically demanded of their subjects by monarchs, usually egomaniacal, insecure, tyrannical monarchs at that. They're not godly demands in any sense, and it seems remarkable that the world hasn't by now concluded that the demands are counterfeit, having nothing to do with the needs or desires of deity. Deity has no needs. All that is exactly that. All that is. It therefore wants or lacks nothing, by definition. If you choose to believe in a God who somehow needs something and has such hurt feelings if he doesn't get it that he punishes those from whom he expected to receive it, then you choose to believe in a God much smaller than I am. You truly are children of a lesser God. No, my children, please let me assure you again that I am without needs. I require nothing. This does not mean I am without desires. Desires and needs are not the same thing, although many of you have made them so in your present lifetime. Desire is the beginning of all creation. It is first thought. It is a grand feeling within the soul. It is God choosing what next to create. And what is God's desire? I desire first to know and experience myself in all my glory, to know who I am. Before I invented you and all the worlds of the universe, it was impossible for me to do so. Second, I desire that you shall know and experience who you really are through the power I have given you to create and experience yourself in whatever way you choose. Third, I desire for the whole life process to be an experience of constant joy, continuous creation, never-ending expansion, and total fulfillment in each moment of now. I have established a perfect system whereby these desires may be realized. They are being realized now. In this very moment, the only difference between you and me is that I know this. In the moment of your total knowing, which moment could come upon you at any time, you too will feel as I do always, totally joyful, loving, accepting, blessing, and grateful. These are the five attitudes of God. And before we are through with this dialogue, I will show you how the application of these attitudes in your life now can and will bring you to godliness. All of this is a very long answer to a very short question. Yes, hold to your values, so long as you experience that they serve you. Yet look to see whether the values you serve with your thoughts, words, and actions bring to the space of your experience the highest and best idea you ever had about you. Examine your values one by one. Hold them up to the light of public scrutiny. If you can tell the world who you are and what you believe without breaking stride or hesitating, you are happy with yourself. There is no reason to continue much further in this dialogue with me because you have created a self and a life for the self, which needs no improvement. You have reached perfection.